Right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on street level. getting a little used to it. Haven't worked in this studio in a while, so we're trying to get the kinks out. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. And it is a Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now for Two for Tuesday. And Two for Tuesday. Get those in at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Red Sparrow comes out this weekend. So in honor of that, we are going to be talking about the best and worst spy movies of all time. That's coming up on the show as well. And Skip Skipley's on the way, and we're going to have another version of Pop-Up Video coming up. Right now, though, I would love to welcome back to the show one of my favorite guests, Beverly Gray. She's been in the Hollywood business for many years, and she's the author of several books, including Roger Corman, Blood-Sucking Vampires, Flesh-Eating Cockroaches, and Driller Killers. And we had her on the last time to talk about Seduced by Mrs. Robinson, How the Graduate Became the Touchstone of a Generation, which is a tremendous book. She also writes about new and old movies on her blog. You can check out beverlygray.com and beverlyinmovieland.com. For more information, and we have a link on our Facebook page. We thought we'd have Beverly on to talk a little bit about her books, and it's coming up on Oscar weekend, and I know she has some thoughts on that, so we want to welcome Beverly back to the show. Beverly, welcome back.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
I am so thrilled to have you on. It's such a pleasure. Let's talk a little bit about the last couple of times you were on the show. You were talking about two specific books, Roger Corman, Blood-Sucking Vampires, Flesh-Eating Cockroaches, and Driller Killers. You worked with Roger for many years.
I sure did. I worked for him for almost a decade in two different periods, both at New World Pictures, the famous New World Pictures, I guess I should say,
yeah,
and at Concord New Horizons. So I had lots of Roger Corman adventures and wrote about them and about what it's like to be a part of the Roger Corman world.
Yeah. And, well, can you briefly tell people what it's like to be a part of the Roger Corman world?
Well, you never know from one day to the next what's going to be happening. But you know you're making lots of movies, you're making them fast, you're making them cheap, and you better have a sense of humor.
And Roger, the thing about Roger Corman, which we've talked about before in the book, is that he had this amazing way of, he had a great eye for talent. I mean, the people that went through Roger Corman's school were amazing.
That's true, and in fact, this is appropriate. There was one year when so many Roger Corman alumni were winning Oscars that someone said backstage, this joint looks like a meeting of the Roger Corman Alumni Association.
Yeah, it really is crazy. Was it Francis Coppola, Martin Scorsese, Jonathan Demme? The list goes on and on.
Right, those are just the directors. James Cameron.
Yeah.
Ron Howard, who directed his first movie for Roger Corman.
Right.
Yeah. And the list continues. Jack Nicholson.
As a young actor working in Roger Corman's movies. It's a great book. It's a lot of fun as well. And the last time you were here, we were talking specifically about The Graduate, which you wrote an entire book about called Seduced by Mrs. Robinson, How the Graduate Became the Touchstone of a Generation. And again, remind everybody what got you to write that book. Why did you want to write that book?
Well, it was a book of my generation, but what fascinated me was that something that started out was thought by its filmmakers to be a fun, quirky little romantic comedy turned out to be a powerful film for the people of my generation, people who were just starting to realize that they weren't exactly pleased with the direction their parents were taking them in and that they wanted to be their own people. That message came through loud and clear in an era where Vietnam was looming, all sorts of other social things were happening. But that film is still with us. That's the other fascinating thing. And I think one reason is because it was written and produced in such a way that everybody can see themselves in one way or another in that movie. You can see yourself in terms of your parents, in terms of your romantic life. It's just a movie that a lot of people who are or were young really can identify with.
Yeah.
So it's still with us.
It's such a great movie, and it really is timeless, Beverly. And you bring that up a lot in the book, and that it touches generations after generation after generation, and it's still really powerful and still really potent today.
That's right. In fact, at Stanford University, they show the film every year for the graduating seniors, and it's a way of pointing to the real transition that people make when they're graduating from college and going out into the world and suddenly discovering they're not quite sure what's out there.
Right.
Not quite sure how they want to approach it.
You know,
so that's a pretty universal.
It is. It is. And it was a movie that, you know, that I found intriguing as, you know, when I was much younger. But I have to say that in terms of generations, I'm 52 and I'll be 53 this year. So when the movie Risky Business came out in 1983, mm-hmm. I pretty much know how you felt when The Graduate came out. It felt like that for me. It was like my generation's Graduate, and it still remains one of the most important movies. I was 18 when I saw Risky Business. I had just graduated high school, and I was going into college. And, you know, I'm not a rich North Shore kid like Joel Goodson is in that movie, but the themes of that movie profoundly affected me, and it was in an era, and I'm sure you remember this, Beverly, when Risky Business came out. It was an era where there were lots of teen sex comedies, really stupid ones that came out, Porky's and these really terrible movies.
Sure.
But all of a sudden, here's this movie I was blindsided by that was actually about something and really touched me. And I can kind of feel how I can kind of guess that's how people felt, you know, around that generation when The Graduate came out.
That is true. Now the big question, of course, is that movies perhaps don't have quite as much impact today as they used to because there's so much else out there.
Yeah.
And it's a good question what this generation's Risky Business or this generation's Graduate is going to be. Maybe it'll be something entirely different.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting.
Kind of clamor around, well, some superhero movies are pretty banal, but the kind of way that people have been stirred by Black Panther is perhaps important, but it's not quite the same. It's not. It's a great deal more of a fantasy than we're talking about.
It has, though. But I mean, the way that Black Panther has taken off, both, you know, in terms of money. I mean, it's making incredible amounts of money.
Yes.
But also culturally, it's a pretty important film right now, and I'm happy for its success.
I am too. Have you seen it?
Oh yeah.
Oh, you've seen it. Okay.
Oh no, I really thought it was. I really thought it was terrific. I think one of the better Marvel movies that has ever been made, actually. And I think it's just a significant motion picture, just in terms of, you know, first of all, entertainment, but also it says something and it's really important. You know.
Could you classify it with those youth coming of age movies, or is it an entirely different category?
I think it's in a different category. I think you know, it's a film that's I think really important just in terms of the technical stuff. I mean, it's the first Black superhero movie directed by an African American. It's not the first Black superhero movie, but it's the first one directed by an African American, and I think that and especially the success that this has, and I don't know. You know, we have by the way, I just wanted to let you know this, Beverly. In the suburbs of Illinois, we have a place called Wakanda. It's spelled differently, but lately the mayor's department has been getting calls from people saying Wakanda lives. And it's become like Wakanda, Illinois is now like people are getting phone calls from there, and it's become like a gag, but a pretty funny one. So.
Well, I can see a tourist industry starting up.
Yeah, they should take full advantage of it. They really should. Absolutely. So you keep up with all the movies, Beverly. You get out to see the movies pretty regularly then.
Well, I try to. I definitely try to. And certainly the Oscar-nominated ones I pay a lot of attention to.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I want to talk about that, and I mean, we're leading up to Oscar week, which is always a lot of fun. You know, I mean, I love the Academy Awards, and I'm looking forward to it. And I really think, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Beverly. There are some categories that are sort of up for grabs, like even Best Picture. I don't think there's a lock on Best Picture. What do you think?
I agree with you, and that makes it interesting. Although, as usual in recent years, there certainly are front runners for all of the acting categories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's one thing I should say. Back in the year that I paid so much attention to, it was 1968 when movies like The Graduate were being rewarded. There was the Oscar ceremony, and that was pretty much it. I think they were already giving the Golden Globes then, but there were not.
Yeah.
All of these guild awards and local critics awards and people studying the results of all the different categories and figuring out the odds. It was a great deal more of a surprise.
Right.
And surprises are nice. So I hope we have some surprises.
I think so, too. And it is, it, you know, and it's only been maybe 20 years or so, a little bit more, where we have an actually, quote unquote, awards season. Where it's an entire season of award shows. That just wasn't the case years ago.
That's true. And it is tough for the Oscars, which on the one hand is the one with all the history. But on the other hand, we're all a little weary at this point.
Yeah.
If you lived in L.A., you'd probably be even more weary because you can't pick up a newspaper without it being wrapped in a big ad for some film.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it is, it's fun though. I have to say. All right. Now what's, Roger Corman, his connection to the Academy Awards, besides that we mentioned earlier that so many of the people that started out working for Roger became, you know, Oscar winners and favorites, but he was connected to, he won an honorary Oscar, in 2009. Tell us about that.
Yes, he won an honorary Oscar, and it was the first year that there was a separate ceremony, and I wasn't there, but I've seen the recording of it. And for those who were there, that was a very special occasion because what they had decided to do, it used to be on the Oscar broadcast, they would recognize a few people and they got a few seconds on camera. And it was kind of shoved in there along with a lot of other things. And as you know, the Oscar ceremony is always too long. They're always trying to find ways to compress it. And someone got the smart idea of, let's have a special evening for these honorees. Let's really focus on them. We won't have a time limit. We won't play people off. We will really celebrate them without TV cameras present. And that was the year that they honored Roger. And it was really quite something. They honored Roger and, I believe, Lauren Bacall and... I've forgotten, I think John Kelly, the producer, mm-hmm. one other person. Mm-hmm. But most of the evening, it was too bad for those other fellows, but most of the evening was spent with people hailing Roger.
Right.
It's really quite a moving event in that respect because a lot of the people he had starred, people like Jonathan Demme, people like Ron Howard, they were all there, and they were all making speeches in his honor. It was really quite a touching event.
Yeah, that's really lovely. Let me ask you this, Beverly. When did Roger Corman go from, you know, like he had the reputation as a schlock master and a B-movie maker. When did the respect start? When did people start going, you know, Roger Corman is something. Not only is he a smart and savvy producer, makes a lot of movies, makes a lot of money, but he's also a good filmmaker. When did that respect start to happen? Was it a renaissance?
It took a long time. Well, there were always people who loved them. That was one thing that was important, particularly, I think, the Poe movies.
Yes.
That he was making back in the 50s. And among the people who grew up loving them were people who were going to go on to become really famous filmmakers. So that helped.
Yeah.
So those people had that memory of having learned something from Roger in terms of how you move a camera, how you edit a film. So they were always cheerleaders. And then, of course, the ones who got their start from him were certainly cheerleaders.
Right.
And often they often put Roger in their movies as well.
That's right.
So some of that is very amusing. Jonathan Demme never made a movie without
Roger. I know. He's in every one of them. It's great.
And my old friend Joe Dante always found a place for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even Ron Howard, who is not casual in his casting, he's a very serious filmmaker, he was persuaded that Roger had improved his acting skills, and Ron used him in Apollo 13 mm-hmm. as a congressman who's quizzing someone from NASA about cost containment.
Right.
Anybody who knows anything about Roger and his legendary cheapness is amused by that.
That's great. Okay, Beverly, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Beverly Gray is with us. She's terrific. She's the author of several books, a great book about Roger Corman, and a great book about the Graduate as well. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Oscars and what she thinks and who she likes and all that cool stuff. 312-981-7200 for Talk and Text. Get your 2 for Tuesday requests in as well. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with more right after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio right here on Michigan Avenue, and we're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about the best and worst spy movies in honor of Red Sparrow being released this weekend. It's also Oscar weekend, and we're going to be talking Oscars as well. And we're doing that right now with Beverly Gray, who is the author of several books, including Roger Corman, Bloodsucking Vampires, Flesh-Eating Cockroaches, and Thriller Killers, and Seduced by Mrs. Robinson, How the Graduate Became the Touchstone of a Generation, which is her most recent book, and it's a terrific book. And we had her on to talk about that. But it's Oscars time, so we wanted to get Beverly's thoughts on Oscars. Beverly, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Okay, what were some of your favorite movies of last year? Maybe some that weren't, that didn't get recognized by the Academy. What were some of your favorites?
Oh, now you can ask me what wasn't recognized. I'm going to have to do some thinking.
Well,
for a comedy, one that got pretty much overlooked was The Big Sick, which I thought was a very good film. Don't love the title, but a very clever and heartfelt comedy, and I thought the performances, particularly Holly Hunter, were quite wonderful.
Yeah, I was sad to see her not get an Oscar nomination. I was glad to see it got a screenplay nomination, which is nice, but I agree with you. I thought The Big Sick was one of the best films of last year. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. But the list of pictures in the Best Picture category, mm-hmm. Well, I think it would have been fun if something like Wonder Woman had been in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you like superhero movies, that's a really good one.
Yeah, it is.
But amongst the ones that are up for Best Picture, I have some that I strongly liked and some I strongly disliked.
Oh, okay. Well, let's hear both sides, then.
Okay. Well, among the ones I strongly liked, and maybe the one with the inside track, I don't know, because as you said, there's still some iffiness in that Best Picture category.
Yeah.
But I think The Shape of Water is a magical movie. I'm very fond of that.
I think it's a beautiful movie as well. And Guillermo del Toro just makes these wonderfully strange fairy tales for adults, which is kind of refreshing. But yeah, I thought Shape of Water was amazing, and I thought all the performances in it were really good, too.
Yeah, what's an interesting, the two that seem to have a lot of fans, that one and Three Billboards.
Yeah.
Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which in a way it kind of speaks to me in terms of what sort of person you are, because if you tend to be a little bit romantic and a little bit maybe hopeful, you're going to like the Shape of Water. If
right.
you are feeling really angry and cynical, and you're not above being funny when you're angry and cynical, then you're going to really like Frances McDormand and Three Billboards. Fascinating movie. I loved Martin McDonagh's previous movie, In Bruges.
Yeah, me too.
He really loved that.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see what he does on American soil. He's
yeah.
been criticized for maybe not knowing America as well as he thinks he does, but it's a very... I like movies that can surprise you, and both of those certainly can.
Yeah, I tell you something about my personality. I strongly lean towards Three Billboards of those two.
Okay. Yes, somehow I would have guessed that.
I have to say, though, my favorite movie that's nominated for Best Picture is Paul Thomas Anderson's Phantom Thread, which I didn't think was going to get a nomination. And I definitely didn't think he would be nominated for director. He's my favorite filmmaker currently. And I just find his stuff to be so interesting. And my favorite movie of all time is Magnolia. That's my favorite film ever. And so
that's a cool movie. You know, I had forgotten when I went to see Phantom Thread that I really, really, really did not like The Master. I just kind of didn't get it, wasn't interested. But I had liked some of his previous movies. I certainly liked Boogie Nights.
Yes.
Who can not like Boogie Nights?
Yeah.
What a crazy, wacky movie that is. Phantom Thread is beautifully made, and I was fascinated by what it had to say about fashion and clothing, which is not exactly, one would think, a very appealing topic to most people because it's such a limited audience, but it's fascinating.
Yeah.
And then the movie went off in a direction I never would have guessed.
I know.
And which neither of us will mention exactly what happens, but it is so odd and so strange and yet somehow works.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to win Best Picture, but what a delight that it was recognized by the Academy.
I agree.
Categories.
I agree. Now, okay, so very quickly, what are the movies that give me one of the movies that you strongly dislike in the category?
Well, one of them is Dunkirk, which I just found, you know, wanted to respect, wanted to like. Certainly it's about something important in an era that's important. I just couldn't follow the darn movie.
Mm-hmm.
People have talked about how beautifully it's made and how impressionistic it is. And I guess maybe that's right. It gives you a sense of the chaos of what was going on. But I've heard other people say this, too. All those young Englishmen in uniforms, they all look alike.
Yeah.
It's rough to see a movie and be saying to your companion, now, wait a minute, where are they?
Right.
Who is that? Is that the one who, you know, you just don't know.
Yeah.
So that drove me crazy.
Okay. There's a real, like we were talking about this, Beverly, I think that some of the locks are, I think Frances McDormand is definitely going to win. I think Gary Oldman, you can bet the farm on Gary Oldman winning.
Yeah.
And I think Sam Rockwell's going to win, and I think Allison Janney's going to win. So I think all the acting categories are pretty much set. But, boy, it's kind of exciting that the major, the big award, we're not really sure about. And I think that that's going to make it fun to watch.
And people have mentioned, and I have real mixed emotions about Get Out, because I feel, I mean, it's certainly a cultural moment.
Yes.
On the other hand, when I saw it, without trying to read the reviews and get all the details in advance, I had heard, you know, a sentence or two that pretty much told me what was going to happen. I wasn't quite sure how, but I sort of knew what was going to happen, so that wasn't a surprise. And I felt frustrated by that, about not being able to love it as much as everyone seems to.
Yeah, and it might pull an upset and win on Sunday.
That's what I've, yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. Beverly, it's so much fun to talk to you, and we got to have you on pretty regularly, and I hope you have fun watching the Academy Awards, and everybody check out BeverlyGray.com. You can check out BeverlyInMovieland.com as well, and we have a link on our Facebook page. Check out her blog and check out her books. Just a real pleasure always talking to you, Beverly, and I thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's always fun, and I would love to come back.
Okay. Thanks, Beverly. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, there you go. Beverly Gray, she's the best. And you know, her books are great, too. And I just love getting her insight on that. I love the fact that she didn't like Dunkirk. I think that's pretty great, even though I liked it a lot. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Red Sparrow opens this weekend, and we're going to talk about the best and worst and your favorite spy movies. It's all coming up right here on 720 WGN.